something about Kuan Yin that I think is such a beautiful aspect of the mythology. And one of the stories, after her father finally succeeds in killing her and she ends up going into the so-called underworld, which is sort of like hell, there's all these people or beings who are suffering, and she moves through. Her presence blesses everything and everyone in that dark, despairing, wretched underworld place. By the time she leaves, everyone has been completely uplifted. And I think it's a beautiful metaphor to work with. You know, again, what I was saying in that dharana, just really feeling this energy that is very present inside of us when we remember, and just really allowing it to move into all the dark and sorrowful places inside of us, wherever we are on the spectrum of sorrow, from major grief to just feeling sorry for ourselves because, you know, we had a bad day, whatever it is, but just allowing the power of really of loving kindness to seep into all the dark and lonely places. So now back to Bhagavad Gita, it's all so connected. And I'm going to read again what we read last week, because it just bears repeating, the practice of yoga. And these are the teachings on steady wisdom. Stita prajna, what he translates as firm wisdom. And again, Arjuna starts it by asking the question, how would you describe the man whose wisdom is steadfast, Krishna? How does the wise man speak? How does he sit, stand, walk? Reminded me, I remember, there's a wonderful story that I read years ago in a book about Hasidic masters. I know the text it's in and I've gone through it, but I can never find this story. But it's a lovely little story about the Baal Shem Tov to, you know, seekers are talking, and I guess one has come back from visiting with the Baal Shem Tov, and the other one says, you know, something like, and do you listen to his talks, and does he give great talks and great learning and blah, 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 blah. And the other one says, I just go to watch how he ties his shoelaces. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's the truth. Because it's not about anything learned. It really is about how we tie our shoelaces. And that's what Krishna here is expounding on. How to get to that state that we're so connected to the, for lack of a better word, the self, that everything we do, every action is just imbued with that luminosity and that serenity and that love and kindness and that beauty and that grace, all the aspects of perfection. It's always welling up from the self, and it's always wanting to fill us. And we're the ones that push it away. We're the ones that contract against it. We're the ones who pull, we dissociate. That's what we dissociate from. It's so ironic. It's so ironic. Why would we want to dissociate from our magnificence? And yet we do. So, the Blessed Lord said, when a man gives up all desires that emerge from the mind and rests contented in the self by the self, he is called a man of firm wisdom. He whose mind is untroubled by any misfortune, whose craving for pleasures has disappeared, who is free from greed, fear, anger, who is unattached to all things, who neither grieves nor rejoices if good or bad things happen, that man is a man of firm wisdom. Having drawn back all his senses from the objects of sense, as a tortoise draws back into its shell, that man is a man of firm wisdom. Sense objects fade for the abstinent, yet the craving for them continues. But even the craving vanishes for someone who has seen the truth. At first, although he continually tries to subdue them, the turbulent senses tear at his mind and violently carry it away. Restraining the senses disciplined, he should focus his whole mind on me. When the senses are in his control, that man is a man of firm wisdom. If a man keeps dwelling on sense objects, attachment to them arises. From attachment, desire flares up. From desire, anger is born. From anger, confusion follows. From confusion, weakness of memory, and that's the remembering of what we are. Weak memory, weak understanding. Weak understanding, ruin. It is the quintessential teaching on the problem with attachment. If a man keeps dwelling on sense objects, attachment to them arises. We can't help ourselves. It's a natural tendency. From attachment, desires flare up. From desire, anger is born. From anger, confusion follows. From confusion, weakness of memory. Weak memory, weak understanding. Weak understanding, ruin. But the man who is self-controlled, who meets the objects of the senses with neither craving nor aversion, will attain serenity at last. Doesn't mean we can't enjoy, or for that matter, not enjoy, or feel sad, or grieve. It doesn't mean we can't do those things. In fact, we must. But we cannot get caught up in them. We cannot become identified with them. We cannot become attached to them, because that's when suffering kicks in. In serenity, all his sorrows disappear at once forever. And really, the key word there is his. In serenity, all his sorrows disappear at once forever. When his heart has become serene, his understanding is steadfast. And in that understanding, there can be sorrow. Sorrow is beautiful. Sorrow is tendering. Sorrow is sweetening. It's the attachment to sorrow, it's the identification with sorrow that creates the problem inside of us. The undisciplined have no wisdom, no one-pointed concentration. With no concentration, no peace. With no peace, where can joy be? He's really giving us such a profound and at the same time simple teaching. Don't let your senses roam out and get caught up in the everythingness of the world, and keep practicing inward focus. Do those two things. You're good to go. When the mind constantly runs after the wandering senses, it drives away wisdom like the wind blowing a ship off course. It's a great metaphor. The ship is going along, and then the wind knocks it off course. When the mind constantly runs after the wandering senses, it drives away wisdom, like the wind blowing a ship off course. And so, Arjuna, when someone is able to withdraw his senses from every object of sensation, that man is a man of firm wisdom. In the night of all beings, the wise man sees only the radiance of the self. But the sense world, where all beings wake, for him is as dark as night. That one bears repeating. In the night of all beings, the wise man sees only the radiance of the self. But the sense world, where all beings wake, for him is as dark as night. The man whom desires enter, as rivers flow into the sea, filled yet always unmoving, that man finds perfect peace. The man whom desires enter, as rivers flow into the sea, filled yet always unmoving, that man finds perfect peace. That's what I was just saying before. Sorrow can be there. But in the same way that the river flows into the sea, it doesn't take over the sea. It just merges with the water. And it contains everything. fish and seaweed and bacteria and beauty and everything. The man whom desires enter as rivers flow into the sea, filled yet always unmoving, that man finds perfect peace. Abandoning all desires, acting without craving, free from all thoughts of I and mine, that man finds utter peace. Abandoning all desires, acting without craving, free from all thoughts of I and mine, that man finds utter peace. This is the divine state, Arjuna. Absorbed in it, everywhere, always, even at the moment of death, he vanishes into God's bliss. This is the divine state, Arjuna. Absorbed in it, everywhere, always, even at the moment of death, he vanishes into God's bliss. And again, the language, you know, it's a little patriarchal. You want to read between the lines. But the message is so profound. So, and so, as I said in my email this morning, the same teaching that we get in the Yoga Sutra, but it's so poetic in the Gita. I wanted to make the point tonight, and I'll make it again next week. If you look at the architecture of being from the yogic perspective, there's the self, the ground of being, source of all that we are. And then there's all the things that arise out of that self. And the one that creates the most difficulty for us is that sense of I and mine, otherwise known as the ego. And the problem with the ego, and again, this is the yogic definition of the ego, not the psychology, Western psychology definition. We're in our ego whenever the thought starts with I. And the problem with the ego is it's very caught up in externals. If it would just stick with I am, that would be fine. But it gets caught up in I am a woman. I am not feeling well today. I am wishing I could have that car over there. I am wanting this. I am needing that. I am feeling this. And that's when we begin having that sensation of just being thrown round and round in that play of opposites, what the yogis call the play of opposites. And the thing about that ego, that sense of I, in that lovely version of the Yoga Sutras with Patanjali we were reading last year, 2 years ago, what does he call it? The I maker? I think that's what he calls Ahamkara, the I maker. It's a beautiful metaphor for that, the I maker. Because that's what it does. It keeps creating that sense of I. And then it just draws to it anything that will solidify that sense of I. Then attachment arises and the rest is history. There's the verse there about the wise one doesn't grieve. And I read that and I think of Dana. Well, Dana needs to grieve now. But if she's grieving from ego, it's going to be a poor me. Oh my God, I've had all this loss. Oh God, I'm never going to get over this. It's so... And that's a grieving that's tainted by ego. And that's a grieving that's just going to make you feel worse. But there's that other grieving that's just like the heart opening. Just that feeling of just loss. But the loss, there's also connection. And there's loss, but there's love. And there's something bittersweet and tender and amazing about that experience. And that's the self experiencing grieving. And that's what steady wisdom is. That's when we're living from the self. And, you know, I don't want to create the impression for a second that I live there, you know, 24/7. I mean, far from it. That's why we do practice, right? That's why we keep working to become more awake. But that is the state, because when we live from that state, it doesn't matter how hard life is, it's still easy. Because there's no grasping for an idea of what it should be. well, this, I'm having a bad day, and I shouldn't have a bad day. Well, no, it's just a hard day. Mm-hmm. That's all it is. Mm-hmm. But this is what the Gita is talking about. And this is what we've been talking about for years. And I think we cannot contemplate this notion enough and check in with ourselves enough throughout the day. Like, where am I coming from now? Am I in that experience of self? Or am I in that experience of I, maker? And if I'm in the I maker, let me look at what triggered the I maker. And let me see if I can dissolve back down into that state of oneness. Again, in the yogic system, in this system, this tantric system that we've been practicing together for so many years, Shiva is the metaphor for that. And that's really what Om Namah Shivaya is. It's a mantra that at least is attempting to bust up all the stuff inside that's covering over all that hardening. It's like a wall, a stone wall, or something like that, some kind of hard concrete that covers over that experience of the self. And this mantra is at least attempting to bust that whole thing open and just leave us shimmering in that luminous state of selfness. For me, one of the more extreme examples of this was when I got to India the first time, and I had to take part in this whole elaborate puja ritual, and it was so hot, and I was just miserable. I'd only been there a few days. I was just miserable. I just had to stand for hours on barefoot on this marble floor in this hot silk sari. It was like 100 and something degrees, and it was so humid. I was just miserable. And I couldn't wait for it to be over. The whole time I was in my mind, I was just in this suffering. And so identified with my I was so physically uncomfortable. And then 6 weeks later or so, it was the same thing. Same sari, same marble floor, same heat, same humidity. But now I'd been there for 6 weeks and I was acclimated and I was just so, just pulsating with Shakti. And I was in complete bliss during this whole ritual. And that was just such a startling experience. Nothing had changed except me. Nothing had changed but how I was experiencing. Because I was experiencing from the self, not the poor me, drama queen.